Hello, heroes, and welcome to Session Zero, a podcast exploring role-playing through a psychological perspective. I'm Porter Green.
And I'm Steve Discont.
And today we will be discussing personal stigma in gaming.
Hi, heroes. This is your editor for Session Zero, Joe, here with a short update. On Sunday, May 12th at 1 p.m. Central Time, OneShot will be live streaming a benefit fundraiser for our network's own Drew Mergieski. Drew recently had a bad fall and suffered a broken elbow that required surgery to properly heal. Although Drew does have some insurance through his day job, we all know how medical bills and copays can be. That's why we'll be streaming a live play session of Goat Crashers to raise money to help offset these bills. Goat Crashers is a one-page RPG about cheeky little goats who try to crash a party being run by humans. They're going to get inside by any means necessary and have the best time. Once again, that stream will be Sunday, May 12th at 1 p.m. Central Time on the OneShot Twitch stream channel at twitch.tv/OneShotRPG. If you wish to donate to help right now, you can do so by going to gofundme.com/Drew's Elbow. And as always, thanks, heroes. And now, on to the show.
Have you ever felt awkward telling someone that you're into role-playing games?
I mean, definitely in my past I have. 10 years ago, like, I started gaming in the not in the 90s, but the early 2000s. So back then, it was a totally different world, and fandom was not quite so out in the open then, and gaming definitely wasn't.
What about today, though?
Probably a lot less so. I mean, people know what D&D is now.
Do they, though?
Well, at least within, like, the fandom world and the geek world and the video gaming world. I mean, in a business meeting, I probably wouldn't talk about it.
So to tell you how the other month I had to explain to a coworker of mine about what role-playing games were, followed by what LARPing was, followed by how do you, quote-unquote, win a LARP?
How do you win a LARP, Steve?
When you cry.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that what winning looks like?
That's what winning, yes, yes, yes. Maybe. There's no real win condition.
I mean, I know, because that's not what it's about. It's not a war game. It's experience.
I mean, unless you're playing, like, a war game LARP.
Yeah, true.
But I think the reason why we're bringing this up is because we want to explore this idea that, like, being a role-playing gamer or being a LARPer can be stigmatizing. Mm-hmm. And that it's an identity that we have to be, that some people might be a little cautious or anxious about sharing.
For sure. When we think about identities, we think about the stuff we were talking about in our last episode, right? We think about, like, our social class or our gender or our race or our religion. Mm-hmm. But we don't always think about the fact that, like, our hobbies and the things that we do that are meaningful can also be an identity that we might feel stigmatized or shamed for.
Certainly. And I think when we're talking about identity here, we do, you know, just as you said from last episode, we do want to acknowledge that we all have various identities, be they part of a dominant group or a marginalized group. But when we're talking about identities for this episode in particular, we really want to focus on this identity as a gamer, and particularly a role-playing gamer. You know, being a video gamer, that's a whole other identity. And I feel like there's a whole other quagmire we could be waiting into.
A fantasy football sports ball gamer.
That is a game. Yes. Fantasy sports. That is a game. That is being a gamer and being a nerd of some capacity. Yes.
Yeah, if it involves math and a character sheet, it's a game. Just saying. Sports ball people.
Come at us. Please don't.
Yeah, please don't. You're way stronger than I am.
I just don't have the patience right now.
Also that. But yeah, stigma. Stigma is one of those things that makes it hard to be your true self in a lot of places. It's one of those things that's part of being not in the majority, right? Because gaming and quote-unquote geek culture, even though it's become a lot more mainstream thanks to stuff like Marvel and Star Wars, is still not considered the average or the norm.
Sure. So when we refer to stigma, though, what we're referring to is it's in the literature, because sometimes we turn to that. It is an attribute, behavior, or reputation which is socially discrediting in a particular way. So if you practice these or have this reputation, people might look down on you. You might be given less opportunities, or you might be derided for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it could cause an individual to be mentally classified by others as an undesirable, rejected stereotype rather than an accepted normal one.
Sure. It's we're all weirdos, mister.
What?
That's a quote from The Craft.
Oh. Oh, yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. We are the weirdos. You know, it's owning your strangeness, right? Being a gamer is often accepting that you're taking on the label of the side eye. You're taking on the geek culture.
Totally. And especially with when you're into a thing like role-playing games, which is not what people usually associate with gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, you know, people associate games with board games or video games, especially now.
Mostly video games these days, I think.
Yeah, I think you end up maybe having to do a bit of explaining, do a bit of a walking through some of what exactly role-playing is.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, tabletopping is experiencing some degree of renaissance because of things like, well, this podcast network, because we're being brought more into the mainstream and things like Twitch and stuff like that. People are putting their games up in ways that people can spectate on them, which is a totally different experience of gaming. But LARPers are still kind of an enigma, I think, in a lot of places.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah, we are. Well, because people now maybe have a schema in their head of what role-playing games might look like. If you say, oh, it's like D&D,
mm-hmm.
some people now have an image of that. Or they've seen the D&D episodes of Community.
Mm-hmm.
Or Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
But LARPing comes up far less frequently.
And usually in much more caricaturish ways.
Like the movie Role Models.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Ryan Reynolds.
But yeah, I mean, I can remember when like the stereotype within the geek community of LARPing was those obnoxious dudes in trench coats in the back of the store who were playing vampire.
Well, even on the internet, the classic example of Lightning Bolt. Of the people, mm-hmm. the video that was taken of people playing in a LARP out in the woods, that comes up as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even in gaming communities, there are particular types of gamers that are themselves have their own stigma.
Why do we have to do that, Steve? Why is there always a race to put somebody at the bottom?
Well, so I think some of that gets into the concepts of in-group, out-group differences.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that some of it comes down to we often associate with those that are similar to us,
mm-hmm.
whether it's in particular shared value, a particular interest, or particular attitudes. And some might argue that it is a protective gesture for ourselves and our own well-being to bolster the group that we belong to and to either suppress or denigrate the group that we don't belong to,
mm-hmm.
as a way to ensure either our own survival or our own success if you buy into some of those evolutionary perspectives.
For sure. And I mean, while evolutionary psychology is generally not accurate, there are definitely some parts of how the human mind works that have an evolutionary component. Like, we all want to be included, right? We all want to be safe. And part of safety means having other people like you. So when we're dealing with things like stigma, we often will make really intense lines in the sand. Like, at least I'm not as bad as that person over there. You know, I may still like what I like, but in order to be true to that, I'm going to say that person's worse so that I look better.
Mm-hmm. And I think there are different ways that we also manage stigma, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you are going to a gaming convention, it's going to be a lot different about how you identify. You might say, oh, absolutely, I'm a gamer. Whether you acknowledge that you're a role-playing gamer or a LARPer might be another story.
Mm-hmm.
But in that case, you know that you're going to be talking to like-minded people. When you're not in those environments, though, you might have to evaluate your environment a little bit differently,
mm-hmm.
because you're being mindful that maybe your identity in a unique hobby such as role-playing is either stigmatized or it's unknown. So you might be seen as unique, other, or weird.
Mm-hmm.
So what this is referred to often in the psychology literature, it would be having stigmatized identity management. That's kind of what you're doing here. And so the way that I look at it, I really like the work of Chadois and Fisher,
mm-hmm.
where they said that when we are evaluating our identities, and this would apply to marginalized identities as well as being a role player, we have particular approach and avoidance goals that we might be looking to consider when we want to decide whether someone should know,
mm-hmm.
about whether we're a gamer or not. So, and this basic idea is that people can choose whether or not to disclose their stigmatized identity if they're in that opportunity to do so, either to pursue positive outcomes like having greater intimacy, acceptance, or understanding, or to avoid negative outcomes such as social distancing or their own anxiety.
For sure.
And that can also lead to kind of a feedback loop where a single disclosure event can lead to later disclosure decisions. So there's this idea of like upward spiral towards visibility. So if I disclose to this one person and it goes positively, then their attitudes will change. And then I can disclose to another person and things continue to go well as my identity as this, in this case, being as a gamer, is considered either neutral or positive.
For sure. Yeah, it's all about like strategic thinking, right? It's something that we talk about in clinical psychology a lot when we're looking at minority populations and people who experience a lot of stigma. It's how to talk about it, when to talk about it, when's it safe, what the reinforcement of that safety is. Because if you tell somebody about gaming and they are like, oh, cool, tell me more, it gives you that sense of safety and security of being part of the group, of being accepted. And that makes you more likely to come out to the next person about what you like to do. Mm-hmm. And also it's a chance to make that network and meet other people that are like-minded. There's a whole sort of process when you're making friendships that we talk about a lot in like adolescent development, where you're sort of floating out and testing the waters by talking about like dropping the name of a podcast about gaming or having a D20 on your desk at work to give people the chance to see that queuing and say something to you to share that they're also part of that thing.
Mm-hmm. So some of those more subtle ways, I feel, are what we would refer to as signaling strategies. Because mm-hmm. there's two or three different ways that one can signal their identity to someone, or maybe not signal their identity. So one of those, like I just said, it was signaling. So what that is kind of a way of testing the water. So kind of like you said, if I were to say to someone, hey, yeah, that's just like on session zero, and someone gives me a weird look, I would know, oh, they have no idea what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I can quickly backtrack. I don't have a good example of that right now because I'm not an improviser, but hey, it worked in my head for a second. But those are strategic behaviors that allow an individual to gauge a confidant's reaction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Before actually disclosing. So it does give you that opportunity to backtrack. So if you say someone sees a D20 on your desk and they go, that's a really weird type of die, you could come up with an excuse for it, or you might not. But you have that opportunity because you can see how people react to it. You can gauge that reaction.
Yeah, it gives you like a sort of a choice point and a chance to go, hey, are they curious? Are they judging? And decide how you want to proceed from there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the other types would be disclosing. So, you know, disclosing or even revealing. So those might be, you might subtly reveal something. So, oh, well, you know, I have this hobby that I do with my friends sometimes, and we use this 20-sided die as part of that, as a type of game that we play.
Or you could just say, oh, yeah, that's a 20-sided die. And that's right. All you say. You don't have to necessarily share details if you don't feel safe or secure, or you don't really want to have that conversation with a person.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think we tend to be wary about telling people sometimes that we're into role-playing games?
I think that people don't want to be weird. They don't want to sit alone at lunch. They don't want people to look at them funny. They don't want that moment of censure when they ask you what you're doing this weekend and you say playing D&D and they go, oh, okay. And they go back to their conversation. We want to feel included. We want to feel that we're similar to everybody else.
So what would be weird, though, about it? I mean, obviously, we're a little biased. Mm-hmm. But let's take the perspective of someone who might not normally be into role-playing. Why would it maybe seem weird to them?
I don't think that there is really any factual reason why it is weird. The only reason is because of social construct.
Okay.
Right. Because the cultural zeitgeist is that it's part of something that's geeky. That's part of something that's not the norm.
So when you say cultural zeitgeist, what do you mean?
I don't know, Steve. You tell me.
All right. Try to set you up for that one, but
no, I'm just teasing.
No, it's fine. So when we refer to the idea of a zeitgeist or a cultural zeitgeist, this is the defining spirit or mood of a particular period of history as shown by the ideas and beliefs at the time.
It's the cultural norms, basically.
Yeah, just over the course of a particular period in time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we might look at that. The zeitgeist says that, like, this is kind of a weird hobby. We don't really know what they're doing, but it's a couple people who get together and they maybe tell stories around a table and roll dice, maybe eat some chips.
Mm-hmm. Humans do all the same behaviors we do in gaming all the time in other contexts. Like I made that joke earlier about sports fandoms, but in reality, like following a sports team and playing a role-playing game aren't that different, you know, or telling stories or reading books. It's the same sort of process in our mind. It's just the content is familiar or unfamiliar. And I think when there's a moment of unfamiliarity for people, there's a moment of anxiety for people, and mm-hmm. that leads to this sort of pressure, this cultural pressure of things that are familiar to me are okay, and things that are not are weird.
Now, I think there's another angle, though, about why we sometimes fear judgment about being into things like role-playing and LARPing.
Mm-hmm.
One of those, I think, too, is that they have become, at least depending on which generation you belong to, I think they've been associated with really negative things in the past.
Oh, for sure. Like witchcraft and evil magics.
And Satan.
Yeah, like literally Satan.
Yeah. So for some of you out there who might not be familiar, and there might be a number of you gamers who are, there was what was known in the 1980s in the United States as the Satanic Panic.
Mm-hmm. There was a weird thing in the cultural zeitgeist of the time where somebody got the idea that people were practicing satanic rituals and abusing children. That was kind of like the root of the Satanic Panic. And there was no actual factual evidence that this ever really happened.
But it ended up associating things like Dungeons and Dragons and Vampire the Masquerade and other role-playing games like that with Satanism.
Also just goths.
Well,
straight up goths. Well,
you know,
I mean, yeah.
All that black clothing and all those cloves.
And all those terrible, terrible ideas about autonomy and disrespect for authority.
What were they thinking?
I know. But yeah, I mean, in the Satanic Panic, there was this thing that happened too called Chick Tracks, Jack Chick Tracks. And they were these little, like, Christian handouts that people would hand out with Bible verses and little comics on them to try and convert people to the faith. And there was a very famous one about a D&D group, how when you got to level 20, you learned the real magics and then killed yourself or went insane and became a satanic devil. And it's just sort of like the culmination of the evil panic and how D&D was perceived as other all in one place.
Now, this is the story of Blackleaf, right?
Mm-hmm. I will see if I can find an online version for the heroes. I'm sure it's still out there.
And based on that, I think it was called Dark Dungeons.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that there's actually a group that has made a short film where they directly acted out the contents of the Chick Track now.
Oh, yeah. We'll make sure to definitely put that in the notes for this episode.
Yeah. So I think that came out like 2014, sometime around
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now we can kind of look back and laugh on it. But back then it was completely a different experience because in the 80s and 90s, there was a fear that you might be associated with this or you might have to deal with the derision and stigma of being associated, one, with potentially with Satanism, and two, that your hobby, which is typically an innocuous hobby, is leading you to the path of Satan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Having any kind of hobby that's not part of the cultural norms puts you in a position, especially when you're an adult, of having to be different in situations where there's a lot of pressure to be conformist, like the working world. So it creates a difficult moment over the course of your day. Where you have to say, when someone goes, oh, what are you doing this weekend? And you have to answer that question. I know we talked about this a bit earlier in the episode, but I think that that's kind of like the biggest part about stigma right now is that it's really asking, how do we as gamers handle that moment?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do we do to manage it?
Well, and I think sometimes it can be as simple as just straight out saying it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to just disclose it straight up, you can. If you have maybe that attitude of like, well, you know what, I'm just going to deal with the consequences. I have no concerns of this, which if that's your stance, kudos to you.
Hey, be as out as you can safely, right?
Yeah, which is great. You know, marginalized identities, often you can't do that for your own safety or your own success, especially in the workplace. But something like gaming might be an entirely different case.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you might have a little bit of social derision or social exclusion if people find like associate with you, oh, you're that nerd. Got it. But otherwise, all the power to you if you can.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I know one way that I've done it in the past, and I'm still guilty of it sometimes, is the kind of self-denigrating mm-hmm. method of disclosure. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, yeah, I do this silly thing where, like, you know, I go out and do role-playing. You know what role-playing is? Oh, well, you know, it's just a group of us getting together, collectively telling a story together while using some game mechanics to, like, help the story along. It's just my thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is kind of a dismissive way of telling it, but I think maybe part of the reason I've done that in the past is because if I make the denigrating tone, someone else can't, because
mm-hmm.
I've already set it up as this way, and maybe I'm just trying to invoke sympathy.
Maybe.
Or evoke sympathy.
I mean, being self-denigrating is a common strategy to use when you face stigma, because like you said, it's saying the hurtful things so that nobody else can. I also am a big fan of just giving minimal information. Like, I play in a game every Saturday, so I just tell people, yeah, I'm always busy on Saturdays. I have an ongoing engagement. Or if there are people that are in my life in a more permanent way, I'll just say straight up, yeah, we play D&D on Saturdays. And if they ask me a follow-up question, then I'll tell them more. But I don't just offer information about my personal life to most people. Of course, I work with a bunch of therapists. Everybody's always like, ooh, tell me about your thing you're interested in, and I want to know more about it, because that's what therapists do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can actually serve you really well to just be honest and straightforward about it and not give people room or assumptions already. Because if you're self-denigrating, you're telling people hey, this is something to make fun of.
Sure.
If you just say, hey, you know, I played D&D on Saturdays, then they have to react to it.
Well, I think there's something to be said about minimizing, too. Like, mm-hmm. I think maybe the self-denigrating method minimizes some of the weirdness of it because I'm saying, oh, well, I can make fun of it, so it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sometimes we might use, I think you suggested this concept, but business words.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could elaborate on that, using business words as a way to reveal.
Oh, it's not so much about revealing when I use business words. It's more about a way of framing, right? So like I said, I might say, oh, I have an ongoing engagement on Saturday afternoons. If I'm in a business context, people are going to assume that that's like, I see clients then, or I have a meeting, right? They'll put it in context they understand.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I said, oh, I have a game on Saturdays and I'm talking to my sports friends, they'll assume it's a sports ball game.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think one thing to do is learn to read the room too.
Absolutely.
Because just as I said, you know, when we're looking at things from that identity management perspective, when you are trying to evaluate whether to approach or avoid, and you're looking at those perspectives, looking at those goals, when you're deciding whether to disclose or not to disclose, part of it is going to be if you can weed out whether or not the people that you're going to be interacting with, these potential confidants, are going to be accepting of mm-hmm. your interest. And maybe it's about whether they're much more open-minded. Maybe they have an interest in the arts or something creative or something theater. Or maybe they're just already into games in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be trying to filter those things out. And that's why sometimes people use signaling strategies. Again, you're testing those waters.
Absolutely. I think, too, it's important to lean into the discomfort of disclosing the things you love, too, because you never know when you're going to find out that, like, you know, Tim from accounting is a hobbyist board gamer or Susan does improv, you know, mm-hmm. and then you guys all have something that's adjacent to talk to each other about in a way of relating that's totally different and totally interesting.
Well, you know, this reminds me. So this last week, I was actually in Washington, D.C. for what's known as the annual conference for the Society for Industrial Organizational Psychology, or PSYOP. And there is an IO psychology practitioner, Chris Mackey, who offered to run D&D in an online public forum to people at the conference.
That's awesome.
On the app that we had for the conference, she was essentially soliciting players. And at first, before the conference, I'm like, this is really interesting. I want to see where this goes. Okay, you've got a couple players. Mid-conference, she was having to find other GMs.
That's amazing.
Because now there were 28 people wanting to play and a number of people going, you know, I've never actually played before. I've always really wanted to try this. And she was having to have discussions going, well, I've only made enough characters for 7 players. I need other GMs. I guess we're going to have a second night now of GMing too. Cool. Let's see what happens with the scenario.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I got to talk to one of the people who got to try for the first time. So there are other people out there too who maybe they have stigma about wanting to try it. They've looked at role-playing like, well, that's really interesting, but I don't know. It feels weird.
What if I do it wrong?
What if I do it wrong? That's another big one, too. But that's a whole other topic. And eventually, we're going to touch on role-playing for the first time or introducing people to the hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole other issue. But I think that's a very interesting point, though, because even then, there's that acknowledgement and awareness of the stigma. And that might be keeping people from actually doing it in the first place.
For sure. And I think it's so cool how much the zeitgeist has changed in your and my lifetime as gamers. Because 99, 2000 versus now, totally different. And just imagine what it'll be like in 10 years from now. Just from tabletop alone and how people know it and how it's understood. You know, I think we've finally passed through Satanic Panic and are in a place where D&D is fun again.
Mm-hmm.
And like culturally acceptable in more places.
And now we're starting to see even articles in major online publications where people are talking about the benefits of D&D and how mm-hmm. great it is. Unfortunately, I can't recall where it is or the actual article right now, and I'll try and find it later, put it in the show notes if I can find it. But there was an article about someone talking about how they quit Facebook and D&D has been a more solid experience for them.
Yeah, I read that article too this week.
Yeah, because it is something where that individual got to sit down with friends on a regular basis and get to experience a shared experience with them
mm-hmm.
on a regular basis. And they're collectively telling a story together, but the point is that they get to have that social interaction, that bonding that we as humans crave.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really cool experience to share with people. And hey, a weird fact is that actually 2/3 of my current gaming table are ex-work colleagues of mine.
Oh, I believe it. I've played with some of your your ex-colleagues and you.
Yeah, you've played at Board Game Night with all of them.
But... yeah, and we also played in a tabletop game together.
That was before Brandon's time, but yeah. Oh, no, it wasn't. Just Brandon had just started.
Right, but we also, there was the Star Wars game online, and then there was Drift Worlds before that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Drift Worlds.
Yeah.
How could I forget about Drift Worlds?
Well, we've talked about it before. But I feel like since we're straying right now, I feel that maybe we're at a point where we could probably wrap up this session then. Because I think what it comes down to, we know what the stigma is. We know that there are ways to manage the identities and how to go about it. And sometimes you have to read the room, but also know that society is changing and attitudes are changing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, have hope. Love what you love. Don't be ashamed of it.
And on that note, we will see you next session, heroes.
See you next session. If you've been enjoying Session Zero and other podcasts on our network, and you value independent creators being able to support themselves and continue to create content for you, consider supporting our network on Patreon at patreon.com/oneshotpodcast.
Your contributions to the One Shot Network helps us to pay for the studio that we record in, the content that we use to represent our work, the hosting of the podcast on the magic internet, and all the spicy water we consume. Becoming a contributor to the One Shot Network Patreon grants you access to bonus content in the network's secret archive, such as some of our personal gaming stories, and possibly some of your favorite network characters on our pretend therapy couch.
There are also other perks, like the Gift and Book Club, the T-shirt Club, and many more. Please consider contributing today.
If you're looking for another show to listen to, why not try Backstory? Backstory is a cozy, thoughtful interview show featuring the most fascinating folks in roleplay. Join host Alex Roberts as she gets to know game designers, LARP rights, scholars, community organizers, and more. From emerging artists to seasoned veterans, guests open up about their creative process, what keeps them engaged, and their visions for the future of roleplaying.
Heroes, we would love to hear from you and hear your ideas for our show. You can find us on Twitter at @SessionZeroPod, or you can email us at sessionzero@oneshotpodcast.com.
The song you hear right now is Hikari by I Love Brandon off his album Earth and Sky. If you would like to hear more of his work, visit eyelovebrandon.com or find him on Spotify, SoundCloud, Twitter, or wherever else you like to find your chill beats to listen to podcasts to.
Remember, heroes, Session Zero is for sharing information, not for therapy. If you feel like you need support, check out Psychology Today's Find a Therapist database. If you're experiencing a crisis, head into the emergency room or text CONNECT to 741-741 from anywhere in the USA. Be safe out there, and we'll see you in the next session.